Welcome to the Oil Country Podcast with your hosts, John, Kyle, and Dobko.
Hello, Oil Country, and welcome back to another episode of the Oil Country Podcast. I'm going to bounce it over to my co-hosts and see what they've been up to the last week. Dobko, we'll start with you this week. How's it going, man?
Oh, it's going all right. It's going. You know, today I know a lot of people were watching the Masters. I don't typically watch it, but I watched the last like round today, the last little bit, and Hideki Matsuyama became the first Japanese-born man to win a major today. So that's actually like super exciting. But yeah, kind of one stroke victory for him. I know a lot of people were probably watching as well, but good for him. Props there. I don't know. And that's been an all right week. How have you been, Kyle?
Pretty bored out of my mind, and the game last night didn't really help it because I turned it off halfway through, so my other picks kind of got ruined. I've been watching baseball, which is boring, as we all know.
So. That's where I'm at. You just have an exciting life going on there, Kyle.
Well, I watched the Blue Jays got absolutely shit stomped by the Angels two nights ago, and then they just blew them up last night. So
the Jays blew up the Angels last night?
Yeah, they like took turns. It was like 14-3 the first game, I think it was, and then 15-1 last night.
Oh, Jesus.
Those at least were entertaining as far as baseball can get.
So, yeah, exactly. A lot of people with like just not the lack of sports, but the lack of things to do. I have a lot of buddies that are all of a sudden getting back into baseball in the group chats, talking about the Blue Jays and stuff. And not for me, but hey, do what you got to do to entertain yourself. Dobko, about the Masters. You want to mention that we threw some money on some guys, and who was the couples dude that was, or not couples?
Oh man, no, it was Freddie. So John and I did. We just like picked a bunch of names, put $10 on some guys. It was Dustin Johnson who missed the cut, Brooks Koepka who missed the cut, Patrick Reed and Corey Connors actually both tied for fifth. Corey Connors actually looks like he might be in it for a little bit. The Canadian, Canadian representative. He's been at the near the top of a number of leaderboards. He's actually starting to make some noise. So if you're Canadian and golf fan, Corey Connors might be your guy. But Freddie Couples was 750-1 odds. So John and I each put $10 on him. So that $20 bet would have yielded $15,000. He finished with like plus 14 in the tournament though, or something.
Yeah.
I mean, we just like threw $10 here or there on some guys. You know, if any one of those guys wait, like the best odds are Dustin Johnson at like 10-1. So if any of those guys hit, I mean, theoretically you're making money, but it's gambling. So you're not actually making money, but in the long term that is. But
after the first round, I saw Matsuyama was like, I think he had like the fourth best odds because he was on like third or fourth. And he was still like 12-1. And I honestly, like, I know nothing about golf, just to be clear. But I was like, that's like, you know, interesting, like foreign name. He's obviously Japanese or something. Like, debated throwing some money on there, but shoulda, woulda, coulda, obviously. And I don't even think if I threw a bit of money on there, we wouldn't have even recouped our losses on that one.
No. And a little interesting fact for him is his listening to the broadcast, his father was his coach up until a year ago. And then he made a couple of changes and adjusted a couple of things and seems to be paying off. And there was a big push like a decade ago to kind of grow golf in Japan a bit. And it's cool to see like the rewards from it, much like Germany and hockey with the Draisaitl and Stutzel and everybody. Like it's exciting to see the world kind of grow in different sports. So, I mean, couldn't be a better thing. It was interesting too because he was getting interviewed and he had to have the translator there. Yeah. And so you could tell he's like getting emotional, but it's like hard to get it across kind of.
Yeah,
right?
He's
but
getting it emotional, was still, and the translator's like, yeah, it was a good win. Like
that was the first one, but after that it was pretty good. But yeah, no, like again, props to Matsuyama. That's awesome. Good for him.
Yeah, for sure, man. That's awesome. It's a good storyline for sure. We are on this podcast, we're going to get into the sweeping the Ottawa Senators in 9 games, the Battle of Alberta, and touch on kind of Connor McDavid's comments about the Colby Cave celebration of life and that game being on the same day, rescheduled for the same day. And then we're going to wind down with the trade deadline news. Before we get into that, though, I did have a little bit of a interesting story. I'm in Red Deer at my parents' place. I'm down here for work, so I'm just staying here while I'm here for a couple days. But anyways, at the start of the Battle of Alberta game, I don't know if you guys saw this. It was like probably a minute before the broadcast started, or like right as it started. Ron McLean shared a story about like this 77-year-old player that named Ken White, who ended up breaking his hip, and like, oh, throughout his whole career of men's league and minor hockey and all this stuff, he had been tracking his points with the goal of, throughout his whole minor career and recreational career, of catching Wayne Gretzky. And I think he ended up breaking his hip and was like 180 points shy or whatever. But interesting enough, my dad was actually, he practices with that team and plays with that team before COVID times. So this guy ends up breaking the hip at this practice that my dad's at. And he told me about it about a week or two ago. And then we're just sitting there having a beer, watching the Battle of Alberta. And then all of a sudden, Ron McLean pops up with this picture of this guy. And my dad is absolutely speechless watching. He actually kind of missed it right at the start. And right at the end of that clip, he looks on the TV and he's like, wait, what? Rewind that. And we go back and he's like, that's the guy I play hockey with. He's the one that broke the hip like 2 weeks ago. So kind of an interesting little moment happened there, but obviously the best wishes to Ken White on his recovery, man. The guy's a trooper playing men's league hockey at 77, already had two hip replacements and then breaks one of those replacements. So absolutely nuts, but best of luck to him on his recovery. With that being said, and my little rant of a story done, let's get into the Oilers news and events of the last week. Kyle, let's bounce over to you, man. Let's talk about those Ottawa games, you know, sweeping them 9 games in a row. I think that's only happened once in NHL history. Not that teams typically play each other 9 times in a season, but pretty big news, dude.
Yeah. You kind of would have thought that more teams would have been up for that challenge of doing it. Because Ottawa, I mean, they've shit stomped a couple teams in the games that they've won, but they only have 3 more wins than Buffalo does right now, and we've talked all season about how bad Buffalo is. But I feel like every time, maybe not that we played Ottawa, but that I've seen Ottawa play against other teams, they look competitive enough. They've always given us pushback. They're still an NHL team. So yeah, to win 9 games on any team is obviously an impressive feat, especially with how the Oilers sometimes like to play down to other teams' level.
Yeah,
to see that not happen this season has been nice.
I think it really shows to the parity of the league that even though Ottawa's kind of the, like, Ottawa and Buffalo are the dumpster fires, but they still show up, they still work hard, and they can win any night. And I don't know, before we flip over to you, Dobka, I just got to jump in here. It blows my mind at the amount of hate that the Oilers get for sweeping Ottawa from fans of teams that are like under 500 against them. Like Toronto just won, I think, their 3rd game against Ottawa this season. They're like 3-2 or 3-3 against them. And all these Leafs fans completely dumping on the Oilers, being like, oh yeah, just Ottawa. The Oilers wouldn't even be good if they didn't have those 9 games against Ottawa. And I mean, Ottawa would be just about 500 if they didn't lose those 9 games to us. So it goes both ways. And I mean, like you said, Kyle, I think it's an impressive feat, and it really shows to the high parity in the league when you see that being a rare occurrence, even with a quote unquote bad team like Ottawa at the moment. Where are you at with that, Dobko?
I mean, I just like to ask the question when they're complaining about it, like, so why didn't you just beat Ottawa 9 times?
Yeah, exactly.
It's that easy? Okay.
Yeah,
it's not as if we're just steamrolling the Ottawa Senators. It's like a lot of these games are coming down to Ottawa's net is empty and they're all over us in the last minute. Some of them were ass kickings, sure, but I don't know. It's still, like we said at the start, Ottawa was going to be the last place team. It was pretty clear, but they're not a poor hockey team. They work hard. That's the thing, is like, I envy the way that they show up every night and they still
work. They're
actually, like,
surprisingly better than I thought they were going to be heading into the season. Like,
yeah.
And I mean, they have a 13 win on the season. That's saying something, but they play well. They work hard for the puck, like you're saying. That
they're at a disservice being in this division because they're just getting Toronto and Edmonton and Winnipeg and Montreal. And I mean, Vancouver and Calgary are out of it, but they're still good hockey teams. It's not like they get those games against Buffalo and stuff. So it's hard for them to kind of go on a run whenever you – and I mean, it's happened to a number of teams. It's happened to the Oilers. You start heating up and then you see Toronto 2 or 3 times and – Toronto's just a good hockey team, and they've become even better today with the trade deadline. Nick Foligno, we'll get into that a bit, I'm sure. But it's Ottawa's not that far back. You know, they're going to get a really good draft pick. And if they can, you know, get a couple more defensemen, they're a lot closer than Buffalo is.
Ottawa's still, they're 3 years away, and they're going to be a team to still be fought with, man. Like, they have Brännström. Oh, my God, I can't name people at the top of my head. But obviously, Stutzel, Tkachuk. Like, they got a Jamal. Nice farm that's coming together. Yeah. They just picked up. But what they have last season or last draft, like 9 or 10 picks? Something.
They had all those picks, but they also have Thomas Chabot. And I'm not a huge Matt Murray fan, but it's still Matt Murray. He's still a starting NHL goalie with 2 cups under his belt. So, you know, they've got some pieces.
I can't remember who it was. There was an ex-Ottawa. Oh, it was. I think it was Mark Mathot. He had a tweet, like, this is a month or two ago. And he was saying that he guarantees in 3 years the Ottawa Senators will be better than the Toronto Maple Leafs are at that point in time. And it got a lot of flack, obviously blew up, went viral, fans on both sides. But not to get into that too much, but I don't think that's an outrageous take.
Like, they've got a super exciting team. If Toronto can't handle the cap situation that's headed their way in 3 years right now, is that not when all those 5-year years. Contracts expire? Or depending on how that's handled, then Ottawa very clearly can have a shot with all the ELCs they'll still have on there.
And I mean, look at the picks that, like, Toronto, when they kind of started getting good this last couple of years, they did have a really good pipeline, and that's one of the reasons they've had that success. Like, it's not just the big boys, not trying to give too much credit to Toronto, but they've been dumping draft picks constantly the last 2 and 3 seasons. So that's another thing, is like, is this sustained success, especially, you know, Tavares is getting older. He's one of your long-term guys. What if Matthews leaves? What if Marner leaves? Like, they could very well be a very bad team in 3 or 4 years. So it's one of those things. I mean, I don't know. I really hope that happens, because I can't stand a good chunk of Leafs fans. I know they're not all bad. Like, Dobko's got a buddy that's a pretty good Leafs fan. But then, I mean, shit, you go on Twitter and, man, it's a bunch of toxicity. But anyways, I mean, I think it's a really... It shows the credit to our team sweeping Ottawa for 9 games. And, you know, I can't remember, but one of you brought it up. Like, we didn't really steamroll them every game. You look at that last game we played against Ottawa. If it's not for Mike Smith's performance, we probably lose that game. I don't think Ottawa dominates us, but I don't think we dominated them at all either. So it is one of those things, again, getting back to the parity. And, you know, Ottawa or Tampa Bay, this is an impressive feat. And I think it's, you know, credit where credit is due to the Edmonton Oilers of this year.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like, they showed up 9 times and won 9 times. I remember the first couple of games, like, Ottawa had lost like 8 in a row, and we beat them for the 9th in a row. And they had a tough stretch there, sure. But yeah, you still got to show up every night. I don't know. I hate hearing, like, when did it become a bad thing to win hockey games? Like, I don't really give a shit how you do it. You got the 2 points, sweet. Like,
yeah,
I don't know.
If you beat, it's like the bottom 25 teams in the league every time you play them, and then lose every game to the top 6 or 7 teams, I mean, you're still a goddamn good hockey team at the end of the day. It's not like, is it a little bit worrisome going into playoffs? I mean, sure. But anything can happen in the playoffs. And it's just one of those things that kind of baffles me. But fans are going to fan, and they're going to find that way to chirp at a team they don't like. And to be completely honest, just like we do with Toronto and Calgary and Vancouver and all these teams we don't like, Anaheim and whoever else. But with that being said, big wins against Ottawa. But let's move on to the Battle of Alberta. So obviously a disappointing 5-0 loss. I mean, nobody's happy about that loss. But McDavid kind of had a un-McDavid-like, you know, little soundbite at the end, more or less criticizing the league and questioning the league that they rescheduled the game the day of one of their teammates' funerals and their celebration of life of Colby Cave, which... honestly, I love to see it. I love Connor getting more vocal. I think that shows leadership. I don't really look at it in the negative light of, oh, they're making excuses. I don't think that's what it was, even though it is an excuse. But I think that's a reasonable questioning of the league's decision to reschedule that game. Even if you really wanted the Calgary-Edmonton Battle of Alberta, you could have done it on Sunday. The Oilers don't play Sunday, and Calgary goes out east for Tuesday, Wednesday next week on the road. So you really could have done that. And you look at funerals and celebrations of life and stuff, there's a reason most people don't go back to work after the funeral of someone close to them that day. And these guys are expected to go through that super emotional hour and a half long presentation, which, I mean, I watched it. It was a very difficult thing to watch, seeing the family and the players and the teammates and Emily Cave, Colby's widow, talk about that, and his dad, I mean, struggled through his speech, and not ripping on him, completely understandably so. But seeing that, and then what, 4 hours later, yeah, go suit up and play a super emotional game against Battle of Alberta. I should have played the lend me your ears thing after this. Sorry, boys, just taking all the points and ranting on this. But I mean, I'm glad McDavid had that soundbite, and I'm glad he had that moment.
I mean, I completely agree, and it doesn't take away, like, that you still need to show up and do your job, unfortunately, in that situation. But it makes it unnecessarily hard. I'm just wondering, how much does the NHL even know or look into that before scheduling the game, too?
It was a makeup game, so, I mean, they knew it was coming, but it's just, like, it's peak classic NHL, you know? They don't really give a shit, but, so...
I don't know. In the future, I would think that maybe if there's a situation like this that arises again, that they should give teams an option to blacklist days for rescheduled games.
Yeah, I agree.
But that would be the only, because otherwise, what's the like guy that's rescheduling supposed to do? Like, call up the team, call the general manager every day and ask for different
days. Like, hey, does this day work for you?
Yeah, I guess, but. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I'd like to know more into it, I guess. I'm assuming they rescheduled the game. It's a Saturday night Hockey Night in Canada game. We got to get Cassie Campbell hours. She needs a job. Boom.
I guess it's one of those things where it just kind of, it comes off as very tone deaf, right? Like, maybe they didn't realize, maybe they didn't think it was as big of a deal, but it does come off as tone deaf. And I think that's interesting you bring that up, Kyle, because I'd be really curious what that process is. Like, they're obviously not calling teams and saying, hey, does this night work for you? But you would hope that there's some checks and balances checking with these teams to make sure there's not a legitimate reason to not play that day.
Yeah.
I mean... Yeah, am I the only like one that thinks this is the obvious move by the NHL to do this? A month or two ago, we were giving them shit about advertising a Skip the Dishes thing with Joey Moss's, like, death being the punchline. So, of course the NHL doesn't give a fuck about this. Just like they don't care about the reffing and they don't care about the guys in the league. They care about the dollars and the TV money. That's not that surprising.
I'm not taking away from that.
It's just like, it's just another example of how little they care about the people and the human beings behind it. And Connor, I'm glad he's finding his voice, but he hit the nail on the head. I don't know what the NHL is thinking, sending him to go there. I don't, like, if I have a family member or someone close to me who I spend every day with in a situation in the dressing room and on the rink, like, yeah, it's going to be a little bit tough for me to get up to go play a hockey game or do whatever my job is after that. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. It's classic NHL, just be in the NHL and whatever. It's another one in the drop in the bucket in my mind of just mistakes they've made.
Nothing we can do as fans, unfortunately, obviously. But the one thing I will say, to kind of switch gears back to the actual Battle of Alberta in the game, I found it absolutely hilarious. I creeped into the, like, Calgary Flames subreddit and saw them on Twitter, and like, shit, you'd think they just clinched a playoff spot. And I did the math yesterday as kind of an update. They have 15 games left. If the four teams in the playoff picture continue the pace they're on, for Calgary to tie Montreal, they would have to go 13-2 for the rest of the season. So they're fucked. Unless a team collapses, they're done. And I do, like, this is going to be such typical Oilers fans talking about draft picks and losing when it doesn't matter. But I do find it really funny that they're monstrously celebrating this win. And I look at every Calgary win down the stretch as just a slightly more decreased chance that they get an impact player in the draft. And I find it hilarious because I don't think there's any chance that they're going to make the playoffs, you know, aside from some huge collapse. And I love how they're, don't get me wrong, it's great to win a Battle of Alberta, but I find it hilarious how hard they celebrated from that.
Well, you know, it's little milestones for those guys down there. You know, there's not going to be much for them to cheer for. You got to get it in while you can. Congrats, guys. You beat the big bad Oilers. That's your Stanley Cup. You notice how up here we're kind of like, oh, whatever, it's just one loss. It's we're still in the playoffs while you guys are like fighting and scrapping to eke your way in and get booted in four games. So good for you, Flames. There's my slow clap for you.
Yeah, like you said, that's their Stanley Cup. I mean, hey, we've been there celebrating those losses, but I mean, shit, it's just, hey, it feels good up here looking down at the mighty Calgary Flames just struggling down there.
I've had to hear the Calgary Flame fans like turn their nose up of like, look how terrible the Oilers are. And have they even won a playoff game since 2005? So I don't even, like, Calgary Flame fans acting like they're on their high horse and they know so much shit. Like, your team is going to be an absolute dumpster for 10 years. Enjoy.
Because yeah, they're mediocre. They've won one playoff series since their Stanley Cup run, two if you include the play-in round of last year, which I personally don't because we lost and I don't include it. But, hey, that's you can be biased when you have your podcast. I mean, we're going to do that.
You're so buttery, too, guys. You're so salty. You're so salty.
Hey, I'm not that salty.
It's just fun. It's just hilarious to like hear these guys go on. It's.
I do want to mention this day, April 11th, that we're recording to a day early that it drops. It is the 1 year anniversary of the Colby Cave death. So take a look. If you want to donate some money, I just kind of wanted to plug this a little bit because I do think it's important for the memorial fund. You can find more info on the Oilers website. So take a look at that. It's a really good cause. Just wanted to kind of plug that before we switch gears and talk about the trade deadline a little bit here.
Whatever, like, I agree with Dobko. Like, what the fuck are we supposed to do? We don't have the cap space, so unless
we're hard for me to like look. I even looked at the board and I was like, who do these guys fit our needs? And there's like one dude who would fit the needs of like a left defenseman, and I'm like, he's $3 million, so we're not even gonna go get him because that means Chase on and now we're gonna have to do this, or they're gonna retain, we have to retain a draft. It's just too many moving parts every single time, so it's like,
I wouldn't be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked to see Holland do something, but it's going to have to, like, everything's going to have to come together this year. It's not something like last year where you've got some cap space. Like, we do have a little bit of LTIR relief. I think it's like 1.5-ish, assuming, like, obviously Klefbom's out. Cuckoo is expected to come back earlier, but I don't think that's till the playoffs. So his, I mean, small salary is LTIR. You've got a little bit more IR relief, but it is still, like, you're going to have to send some money out. I don't expect him to move picks. And it's just with the amount of picks we've moved and the amount of prospects we've had already progress to the, you know, to the big club.
Yeah, like our cupboards need to be restocked. I think we've talked about it before, like a couple of weeks ago. Like, this is, if there was a year that I was going to trade the first round pick, this would be it.
So can next we talk year, about that?
No. Just for like the draft wise and like how the situation of COVID.
So not trading
the first in general. Just yeah.
See, and this is the thing with that whole argument of like trade the pick because it's too volatile. It's like, by that argument, couldn't we get a top five talent at like 25?
So agreed.
Exactly it. Like, this is so much more of like a lottery ticket year than any other year, with the lack of scouting, the lack of games played in junior.
And there's also like, even for like lottery pick wise, like what's the benefit of winning a lottery this year? Like, I mean, obviously you still get your pick of the crop, but still, like, there's no Lafreniere, there's no McDavid, there's no, you know, Austin name Matthews that's been thrown out there as far as I've heard. Yeah, like, you're still gonna get a good player, no doubt, but it's going to be harder this year. It's going to really show which teams have good scouting networks.
We want to come on here. We want to give like actual trade things because the trade deadline should be exciting and it should be a time where you're adding and making that push. But there's just so many X factors this year, like never before. The flat cap, the COVID, the quarantining. You know, there's not a lot of guys who want to move money out. They're like, money in, money out is such a term that you hear for every single team, so everyone's up against it. Like, on the trade bait board, like, Chicago's cap space is on there as a trade, like, asset. So it shows you how tight and how hard it is, and not to mention the expansion draft. So teams are also looking ahead of, like, when you look at the Oilers and someone's going to, like, well, let's trade Chris Russell because he makes $4 million this year and that'll free up cap space. Okay, so if we trade Chris Russell, now we don't have a veteran defenseman who's eligible for the expansion draft. Now we need to sign a guy to make him eligible or bring a guy in or bring a guy up. And it's like, it already creates another wrench in it. And, you know, there's just too much going on and it's too much of a shortened season. And I fucking hate that I'm having to say this. I do. Trust me, if there's an Oiler fan who would love to see Taylor Hall back in this lineup, it's me. I would love it. But we can't have it. And it's taking everything in me to be like, you know, we can't do it. Like, we shouldn't and we can't. Wait until the offseason. We keep our powder dry. And it kills me to say that after the decade of darkness, but it's the smart move. Might not be the one that's the sexy one, but it's the smart one.
I think the thing is, we shouldn't get carried away with our success right now. We should still just continue the path of being patient. It's what we've waited so long for with how long we sucked for. And now that we're seeing the benefits of it, let's not start throwing away years of that in order to have success now. Keep the growth happening. Keep the team gelled together. We have the offseason to try to keep as much of this roster together as we can. And then add pieces then to make us a
and like contender. let's not look too far forward to next year. But if Oscar Klefbom comes back, that's like a free agent signing or a trade addition in itself, and it costs you nothing. Dylan Holloway makes the jump up, it costs you nothing. Cooper Marody, Tyler Benson, Ryan McLeod
just got his first AHL goal last night too.
Lavoie, Savoy, like there's guys in the system that it's like we need a third line center, like. Fuck, I hope one of those guys comes and plays third line center for us next year. Or one of those four guys who can play wing, who are skilled, can take that spot in the top six. Hell, take Nuge's spot, bump him down. What we're trying to create and what Ken Holland is trying to create is competition within the lineup. And I said it at the beginning of the year why our depth is so much better. And that's still the case. And when you eliminate that depth below, you have no competition in the lineup and you go back to what the Oilers were before. And I don't want that ever again.
I will say, I think the only way that we make a big move for tomorrow's deadline is if the price of some players that have 2 years on their term drops. So if it comes up where Holland decides to move that first, but you can get a Ricard Raquel and actually have that as an addition to your top six that you would have went after in the summer and for this year. Now, I do think that's wishful thinking. One, I don't think Anaheim's going to want to trade Raquel to a Pacific Division opponent. For two, I don't know what that costs. And with the money going out, like, I don't know if is Anaheim like, yeah, sure, you throw in a first and a prospect and we'll take James Neal or we'll take Cassian and Chiasson. Like, I don't know if teams are chomping at the bit to do that. And I think you're going to overpay even because those guys that have term, there's no pressure for that team to move them this deadline. They could move them in the summer. They could move them at the start of next season. It's not like they're going to lose them for nothing July 1st or whenever the actual free agency opens. With that being said, I wouldn't be surprised, not necessarily a depth defenseman and like adding a seventh or eighth guy, I wouldn't be surprised to see Holland go after a lower salary or, you know, someone that's under $3 million that they wouldn't mind retaining and adding a B-level prospect to that on the left side. Not necessarily like a world beater by any means, but someone that's better than Caleb Jones and Chris Russell. Because Cuckoo's kind of rumored to be coming back, but shit, the Oilers might be out of the playoffs by the time he gets healthy. He might not come back till the offseason. And I don't think Slater Cuckoo's some stud that you're slotting in as your second pair, like, oh wow, our decor's way better, with no disrespect meant towards Slater Cuckoo. I've liked how he played before the injury, but those are a couple moves I wouldn't be shocked. And then the last thing I'd say is I wouldn't be surprised to see a bottom six center come in that's not a sexy trade, but someone that has better face-off percentage. Because if you look at Kara and you look at Turris and you look at Haas, that is the one thing is we do not have a guy in the bottom six that can win a defensive zone face-off when you need it.
I think that's an issue. You're right. And we've talked about Luke Glendening a couple times as being that Detroit connection to Ken Holland. And I still think that might be a possibility. But, you know, every time I start to look at it again, I start to get the idea of like, okay, what do we give up to get that? You're looking at a third to fourth round pick. We don't have either of those this year. And I really think it's hard pressed for him to do that next year. So
honestly, well, I think with a guy like Glenn Denning, like, you probably get him for a fifth, especially at the end of the deadline. If Detroit doesn't get any other suitors, like, he's a very unsexy player. Not that he's a good looking dude, but he's an unsexy hockey player. He's not sexy like Chris Russell is.
I mean, he has 9 points, and I know Foligno is obviously a much better player, but he has 16 this year, and he just went for a first.
He also went for a first with getting double retained, though. But I mean, true, like, that is a good point. That's a big, big payment for a, and I like Foligno as a player, but he's 33, and like you said, what, he has 16 points or 15 points this year?
16 right now.
Is he a UFA after this year?
UFA this year.
Yeah, I thought so. I mean, like, hey, let's, I mean, to sidetrack a little bit, we could talk about that. Bringing in Nick Foligno into this North Division, into Toronto's lineup, like, shit. They just got, in my mind, as the, like, clear best team in this division to, like, straight up, Toronto's a Stanley Cup contender, and I think they are too. It feels dirty.
Yeah,
but they really are. They're a good hockey team. That was a big piece. If they add, like, a Chris Russell type of guy, like a veteran, another defenseman, I don't know how they could work it in. I don't know what their cap situation is like, but man, Jesus, they've got a goalie. They've got three solid defensemen. Morgan Riley, I think, is a stud, and they've got some really great top end depth. Their top six is just nasty now.
Yeah, it's stupid. I honestly still fully expect, just with the mentality of the Toronto Maple Leafs, that they're going to, like, let's say they walk through the North, you know, knock on wood here, but let's say they do that. I think they're going to get, like, stomped by one of, like, the Avs, Vegas, Carolina, Boston, whoever's coming out of the East. Like, I don't have faith that they're going to win a cup, but knock on wood, because I don't want to jinx that, because I would cry if they won.
Joe Thornton's on that team, so they're probably not going to win a cup. I think that's probably just, like, the laws of nature. But
that would be, like, the one positive of seeing Jumbo Joe win the cup. But again, I'm knocking on wood, like ferociously.
That's over a, and I'll, that's I'll give Jason Spezza a little bit of a, like, I do like Jason Spezza and I do like Joe Thornton, and it'd be sweet to see them win a Stanley Cup, but in pretty much any other jersey.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Maybe not pretty much guys, like, Vancouver, Calgary or Winnipeg or Montreal, basically any Canadian team that's not Edmonton. I hope that every American team wins a cup before you.
Yeah. I want to see the cup back in Edmonton, but, like, on my terms, you know, like, I'm very, very picky about who I want to win.
The cup can come back to Canada, but only if Edmonton brings it back.
Exactly. Exactly. And partially because I have, like, $100 bet on the first Canadian team to win the Stanley Cup as the Oilers. And I mean, that's, like, 2% of the envelope there. The 98% of the envelope, another classic John cliche talking about percentages of an envelope. I don't know what the fuck that is. But anyways, really
hope. Imagine you could have put that bet in, what, like 20 years ago, and you still be waiting for a fucking payoff?
I threw it in 2 years ago, but yeah, you literally could have put that bet in and you'd still be just sitting on it. It'd be like, do I get paid out based off of inflation over this 25 years that I've been waiting for the Stanley Cup to come to Canada? I bet 365 has just been holding my $100 for this. I feel like I should get some type of return if I hit it on top of what I was promised. But hey, whatever. Anything else you guys like to add before we wrap up the pod here?
I hope they play better than that shit show they did last night or Saturday night when you listen to this. But God, that's all I'm left with is, like, I was pretty speechless after that third period. It was, no one showed up. I mean, like, one thing I was kind of thinking leading into this was, for the first time this season, I'm starting to get, like, a little bit in the back of my head of, like, oh, our depth is just, like, not coming back around. And I was expecting the bottom six, like, I talked about how we have competitiveness there to, like, show up again. Like, when we had that, like, 13 of 15 wins, and I don't expect that again. But I mean, our bottom six was moving and adding more offense, and it's just like Devin Shore is playing his ass off, and I love Devin Shore, and Josh Archibald is running around, but, you know, puck's got to go into the net at some point, and we've lost that ability to score those greasy goals, and
yeah,
that's something we need to get back to, and that's kind of been a problem with this team for a while. But
on paper, I do like our bottom six going into the playoffs, though.
We're a little undersized, but I mean, like, I like that we're feisty as hell. I mean, Josh Archibald doesn't really play to his size, and the way Devin Shore, like John pointed it out the other night when we were watching a game, Devin Shore like turned the puck over on the half wall when they're in the offensive zone. And the second the puck was off his stick, he turns, slams his stick on the ice, puts his head down, and just takes every stride as hard as he can until he reaches the opposite blue line, gets in the passing lane, breaks it up, puck kind of goes up the ice. And the broadcast doesn't mention it. Like, no one's going to talk about those plays. But those little things like that, those bottom six guys who are doing that, that's why Devin Shore is playing every night, because he does shit like that. And when you get guys who do that in every facet of the game, that's when the puck starts to go into the net a little bit more.
And that shit's contagious too.
Sorry?
Like, that effort is contagious.
Very, very much so. Very much so. One little, you kind of touched on a little criticism of the broadcast, Kyle. One thing I do want to say is Kelly Rudy starts to point at my boy Jesse Puljujärvi. Yeah, and I'm going to sit here and defend him a bit, because he's like bitching about his
fuck Kelly Rudy and fuck everything he says. He's the biggest Calgary homer I've ever seen.
He goes,
my dad denies it for every time I bring it up. Kelly Rudy doesn't love the
dude. It's okay, sir. I got to jump in here. It's like literally, I went into the Calgary, and we're not getting into another Cassie Campbell talk here. We're not going to do it. But I went into the Flames sub, and there was a ton of Flames fans talking about how Cassie Campbell is like an Oilers homer. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? She's the biggest Flames homer I've ever met. Like, what? Because she talks about how McDavid's really good. Then all of a sudden she's an Oilers fan? Like, what? Sorry, end rant. Jesus, that pissed me off.
The entire panel is Calgary bias. I don't.
Like, I was, the thing I was going to get at is, like, Kelly Rudy starts going, his defensive game needs to get better, and shows him at the end of a shift back-checking and not really making it to the guy. And then he's like, and he quits on plays. And the next clip he shows is him going into the boards, physically outmatching Milan Lucic, taking the puck away, and then losing it when the defenseman pinches on him as soon as he escapes from that.
And he's like, you gotta get that puck out. You gotta get that puck out.
Wait, he just physically took it from Lucic. No one does that. You just criticized his defensive game. He makes an outstanding defensive play in the very next clip. And then you're just like, you know what? Not quite good enough. Connor could get that puck out and probably score.
Great,
you know, Sean Monahan's a guy who would get that puck out. Sean Monahan would go down there and bury. And Johnny Gaudreau and Mark Giordano, the superstars they are, would carry this team to the cup. But fuck Connor and Leon. I'm Kelly Rudy. Thanks. Rant over.
No, I'm completely. I'm glad you brought up Devin Shore too. Just bouncing back a little bit, because yeah, I'm a huge fan, man. Like, just the way he plays. He's obviously doesn't have a ton of NHL level talent, but he's got enough to get by with that level of work ethic he has, and he's a smart player. So, and I mean, you go back to the Ottawa game, and he had a really nice deflection for a big goal in the second Ottawa game we played. So it is, I mean, shit, you need players like that. But I do agree with you on the depth in general. Yeah, would it be nice for Connor and Leon to score way more in this last Battle of Alberta, more than the zero goals they had? For sure. But at the end of the day, you're going to have games like that, and you need that bottom six depth scoring to come in. I'm concerned about the lack of our top six wingers too. Like, I love Kyler Yamamoto. I love Jesse Puljujärvi. But in an ideal situation for a true contender, those are probably second and third line players.
Well, I think the issue that you have with them is they're not 2 years older than they are.
Exactly. And I'm not ripping on them at all. Like,
No. I'm not, yeah. I'm not trying to say you are, but it's like, when I look at the top six as a whole, and I look for like areas that I'm going to criticize, I think that the top two centers and the top two right wingers are kind of like criticism free areas. Like, you know what you're going to get there. You know, at this point in the season, I'd say it's pretty clear that four of our top six, probably five with Nuge, are good and clean and away. I think the bigger issue is that left side. And I said it from the start that Nuge lacks that offensive upside that you want there. And I think that's a more valid criticism of the revolving door there. Like, those two on the right have been by a mile better than the guys we've had in here over the past year.
Oh, so for sure. Like, and they're playing.
That's where the hole really is that left wing. And it's like, Mike Hoffman last summer was a name that I kept kind of just like, and you brought up Rickard Rakell, and we keep talking about these same guys, but like, fuck, we need that type of player, that the guy who can come in and give you something offensively, where it's not just like Dominic Cahoon is not a black hole of offense, but he's not a helpful offensive guy, really. He doesn't really help drive the boat at all.
Realistically, Dobko, just to add on to that, name a trigger man on the Edmonton Oilers other than Leon Draisaitl right now. We don't have
Evan him. Bouchard.
That's
play him on left wing.
But and that's the thing. It's like, not to rip on Nuge, but and honestly, not just Nuge, Yamamoto and Puljujärvi. I think they all play the right way. You watch them; they're doing the right things. But at the end of the day, the production isn't there, and you're playing with Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid, and that's what this team is lacking. And that's why I say, ideally, those guys are third liners. Like, ideally, Kyler Yamamoto is your third line guy that forechecks like a motherfucker, and plays sound way above his size, physical game, and contributes a little bit. But because of our depth, or our lack of like high end winger talent, he's on the second line. Same thing with Jesse Puljujärvi. Love the way he plays. Think he's had, you know, a minorly breakout year this year, and proven himself as a legit NHL player. But the production's still not there. And I'm not criticizing those players. That's just the situation they've been put in.
Yeah, I guess. I more look at the holes we do have, and I just think that, like, the top two centers and top two right wings aren't holes right now. And so there's no reason for me to sit here and like worry about that when there's so many other things that I got to fix on this roster if I'm Ken Holland.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I don't disagree with that. And like you said, in 2 years, I think those guys are going to be those guys. Like, I think they're going to be
maybe next year
25 goal scorers for sure. I find it tough. Like, you watch the way Puljujärvi plays. I find it hard to say that if he stays with the Oilers and he stays in our top six playing with Draisaitl or McDavid, that he doesn't score 30 to 35 goals at least once in the next like 3 to 4 years. I think he's a 35 goal guy. He's got the physical capability.
I would agree. And you see flashes with him more and more where it's early in the year, he'd get the puck on a stick and he'd get, like, look a little terrified and there it goes. But he's getting more and more comfortable, and he makes those quick reactionary stick handling plays and gets himself space, gets the puck off his stick on the net or on a guy's stick or something, where those are happening more and more frequent. And I think it's Jesse Puljujärvi, it might be the biggest head case on our team at this point when you need to have a guy confident and moving. And that's such a huge thing with these young guys. And that's reason number 986 why I don't think we should start selling off assets to make a push for the Stanley Cup this year. Because as much as I don't want to get rid of our prospects in the system, like, the guys on the team are still largely prospects in some spots. Like Ethan Bear, Caleb Jones, Evan Bouchard. You look up and down this roster. We just talked about the Puljujärvi, Yamamoto, Holloway, who's probably going to be here next year. Shit, we've still got such a young team. And it's just like...
Yeah.
Not quite there yet, but man, it's like, I want to say all this and like, I keep feeling like I'm being really pessimistic about the whole thing, but we still, I think, probably have the largest bright side in the NHL because we have Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, and the evolution of Darnell Nurse is one of the best things that's happened to this team this year.
Yeah. And Holland has addressed depth issues year over year, and you can see they're getting better and filling in these guys. I mean, you look at the players that are minor adds year over year the last 2 years that have had just a moderate impact. Like, we just talked about Devon Shore. That guy was on a PTO. That is not a sexy signing, but he's been a success in Edmonton. So once you get that team, the core continuing to develop, I have faith that Holland can round out the roster. Kyle, do you have anything you'd like to add at the end of the pod here? I've got one point, but it's got to be last.
I apologize. I've been like falling asleep over here, man. Yeah,
you're late, man.
Like, it's been like 3 years that the Oilers' bottom six has been an issue, and that we need a top line winger again. Like, it's just like at this point, I'm just waiting. It's being patient. Like Dobko said, we have youth on the right wing. I agree with you. Ideally, they're third line players if we had a staff. Top four already, but they're not, and they're filling in that role fine. It could be better, sure, yeah. But they're fine, and yeah, the only issue with them is that they're too young and they need more time to develop. So in 2 years time, or even next year, like we said too, this team has a chance of being a real contender, and they're not going to be an issue at all.
And if Mike Smith keeps playing like the peak Mike Smith, shit, yeah. This game could go on a run, bro. If we get the goalie,
find him. If the he plays like
2006 Dwayne Rollison,
we've looked more. I was looking more and more into the goalie UFAs, and we're going to touch more on this in the offseason. But there are some exciting guys who are going to be eligible and available for the Oilers. So
I think every Oilers fan right now wants Koskinen to get traded, Linus Allmark to get signed, and Mike Smith to get re-signed for a year. I think that's pretty much every single played Oilers the game fan. Last night? Sorry?
Could you imagine if Koskinen played the game last night? What would people have said if it was the same thing that it was 5-0 Koskinen was in?
He would have got torn to shreds, man. And the last thing, the one thing I will say about that, and Mike Smith is your number one guy right now. It's definitive. Miko's not playing enough, though. Because, like, at the end of the day, Mike Smith's hot run could end at any moment. Again, for the third time this episode, knocking on wood. He's played spectacularly. But we've seen it before. He's a hot and cold goalie. And I don't think Miko's playing enough. Not that he needs to play 50%. He just needs more than one game every 12 days.
Well, maybe if he played better in his one game every 12 days,
he's been playing fine. The next two. Other than the first shot goals that he had a bad run there, statistically, he's had a fine run. But we're not getting into another goalie debate. We're not doing it. We've had this enough. I did want to add with Kyle mentioning that he's tired. For any of our new listeners, we kind of did this a lot early on, kind of talked a little bit more about ourselves. But for anyone that's joined us in the last couple episodes, the last 15 episodes, Dobko and myself are roommates in Edmonton. And Kyle is the overseas, you know, overseas
correspondent.
Long Kyle's distance the overseas correspondent
international correspondent
from like Montreal, Quebec. So he's 2 hours ahead of us. He's being a champ and staying up late. So no criticism on Kyle being a bit tired. That's my bad for being a bit late tonight.
You're good.
What's that?
I said you're good. You're good.
My last point is Milan Lucic. I just wanted to congratulate him. He had his 999th game in the NHL against the Edmonton Oilers the other night. From Daryl Sutter, I had a call with him, and all Daryl has to say is, I hope he brings way more energy in game 1000.
Well played. I'm really happy that you're starting to flex with your Daryl Sutter BFF. He's actually been very close with Daryl for a number of years now. We've been begging John to get a hold of him.
I'm a Red Deer boy. I grew up with Brent Sutter. You can tell by my voice. I'm like easily 65. I actually graduated high school with Brent Sutter. So I'm pretty tight with the whole Sutter gang, Daryl and Brent. And I can't remember the other names of the other guys, but I'm tight with them too. So yeah, it's a big connection we have on this podcast. And we're going to, honestly, next week, Brent and Daryl are going to come on. And we're going to play sad, melancholy music behind it the whole time, just like TSN 1260 does for Daryl.
It's going to be great. It's going to be great. I mean, in all seriousness, though, like we talked about when Lucic left town, we all wished him luck. Like, congrats for playing 1,000 games. That is fucking awesome. And not a lot of people can say that. Like,
especially he's a big power forward like that, man. Like, I mean, he's got some talent or had a lot of talent as a younger player. But, I mean, credit where credit is due. That is a feat.
Respect. Right? Well done, Milan.
Thank you very much, everybody, for listening to another episode of the Oil Country Podcast. Episodes every Monday. If you'd like to interact with the show, feel free to reach out to us on Twitter. DMs are open. Send us a DM, tweet at us, feel free. We are also on Reddit, frequent the Oilers subreddit, like the bunch of nerds we are. Have a great week, everybody, and we will talk to you next Monday.